My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, you are back listening to The Mark Moss Show, where I bring to you the latest information on Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, and the decentralized revolution. I mean, I'm bringing you the information each and every week that you need to hear so you have the edge. You have the asymmetric information to take advantage of the asymmetric opportunity. Now, we have been talking about Bitcoin creating equality. Equality of an opportunity. And we're talking about how that can change humanity. And so we were talking about how, you know, in countries all around the world, about 2 billion people in the world today have no access to the banking system, to the financial system. We're talking about how in El Salvador, they're allowed, they can get permission. A lot of countries can't. They can, but it's so expensive that most of them still aren't able to do that. But now they're able to just go into their app store, download a Bitcoin wallet, and start transacting on the global economy in real time, instantly. And so that increases the equality of an opportunity. Now, another thing is this is not just to make people's lives in El Salvador better or whatever country. This is better for the whole world. Think about it. Like, how does progress happen? Like, you know, new inventions, new technologies, new medicines, things like that. Well, it starts with people being creative, coming up with new ideas, new solutions, trying those out, failing a whole bunch, trying even more, and eventually they come up with new things, new ideas. Now, the more people we have looking at problems, the more potential solutions we'll have. This is a big problem that we have in the world today where we're, how should I say this? Part of culture, we'll say that, part of culture wants everybody to be the same. Everybody should be the same. Everybody should be equal. We should censor all the stuff that we don't like to hear. You're not allowed to say this. Oh, you can't say that. Don't discuss this and things like that. And so they're trying to make everybody the same equality of an outcome. And that's a serious problem, a very, very, very serious problem. Now, you might think in the short term that's good because people don't say mean things that might offend you. But think about how bad that is in the long run. So what do I mean by that? Well, if we're all thinking the same, doing the same things, not able to talk freely how we want, we start losing creativity. And then we're not seeing problems and coming up with new solutions to that. That is a big problem. So as individuals, we're different. I'm different than you, you're different than me. And what that means is that when we both look at the same thing, we actually see different things. We see different outcomes or different different solutions to that. So if we both look at a problem, I might try to solve it one way, you might try to solve it another. And that's an important thing because we need as many people as we can looking at all the problems that we have and trying to solve them as fast as we can. So I think it probably makes pretty simple sense that the more people we have looking at problems and trying to solve them, the more solutions, the more progress that we'll have. And so right now we have about half the adults in the world have no access to the financial system. They're not in the system. About half of that, half the world also has no access to the internet. So imagine if we can bring half of the world onto the global system to start trying to solve more problems, to try to create more jobs, to create more businesses. Imagine how much more progress this world could have. Imagine the net gain for humanity that will come from this, as opposed to the financial system that we have today that continually pushes more and more and more people out of it. It's not inclusive. It's not driving any form of equality. So this is a big deal. And so we're seeing countries doing this, like I said, El Salvador, Brazil, and a lot of these poor countries that don't have a lot to lose are jumping on board with that. And we're seeing that happen. And it's not just these third world countries that are really, really warming up to Bitcoin. Even in the United States, in an earlier session, I was talking about how, you know, one of the biggest objections that I hear about Bitcoin or any cryptocurrency for that matter is people say, oh, yeah, fine, whatever. But, you know, the government's going to make it illegal. And that's typically probably the biggest thing that I hear. I have many reasons why I don't think that's the case. But most recently, they told us. And what do I mean by that? So we had Jerome Powell, who's the chair of the Federal Reserve, and we had Gary Gensler, the head of the SEC, both said they won't make it illegal. So they told us. On top of that, I don't think they could even if they wanted to, and that's because the level of entrenchment that we've made. So what do I mean by that? Well, now, today, we have dozens and dozens of senators and congresspeople and regulators that own Bitcoin. They own it. They're fans. They promote. They talk about it openly. In addition to that, we have all the major financial institutions of the United States has also jumped on board. So from Goldman Sachs to Fidelity, the largest money manager, the New York Stock Exchange, you name it, they've all built out services to be in Bitcoin. Now, if you understand anything about how laws are made in the United States, then you'll understand pretty quickly that one, the laws, or I should say the bills that get submitted, aren't written by the congressmen and the senators. They're not written by them. They're typically written by lobbyists and then given to the congressmen for them to sponsor the bill. So who are the lobbyists? Oh, yeah, that's the financial companies, right? Yeah. So do you think they're going to be writing bills and trying to get congressmen to sponsor those bills that would put them out of business, that would potentially cause them to lose hundreds of billions of dollars? I don't think that's going to happen. And so even if we had some people in the government that wanted to make it illegal, like Rep. Brad Sherman from California, who's been pretty outspoken about it, he's going to face a lot of opposition, not just from other congressmen and senators, but from the biggest lobbying groups, the financial services. So that's one thing. Another thing I would say is that about a year and a half ago, we had the pandemic and the whole economy shut down. You're well aware of all of that. You're also well aware that businesses were forced to close. Businesses were forced out of business. People have lost their jobs. As a matter of fact, I want to get into the jobs numbers here in a little bit. In the U.S., the Federal Reserve and the government have spent about $8 trillion in the last year and a half, $8 trillion to keep the markets from crashing. Now, let me just put that into perspective for you for a second. We throw these numbers around so big that we lose sight of how big that number is. But in 2008, when we had the great financial crash, if you remember that, right? The great one, the great financial crash, literally the crash that was going to crash the entire global banking system. It was that big, that bad. At that time, the United States government stepped in to bail out the banks with a $700 billion TARP loan. $700 billion. So when the entire global banking system was going to collapse, it took $700 billion to prop it up. They ended up going over $1 trillion by it was said and done. But let's just call it $1 trillion. Okay? Now we're saying spent $8 trillion in the last year and a half. Eight times more. All right, so let me just put it into perspective. So if they've gone that far to spend $8 trillion to keep the global markets from crashing, why would they go make it illegal now and literally suck trillions of dollars out of the market and crash it? Like they wouldn't. They can't. They would completely wipe it now unless they wanted to. But if they wanted to crash it, then why would they have just spent $8 trillion to keep it from crashing? They would have just let it crash, right? So I don't think they will. Now, on top of that, when I talk about wiping out the money, the United States has become the largest Bitcoin and cryptocurrency center in the world. The largest. Now, you may not know what's happened over the last couple of months, but something has been going on behind the scenes almost quietly that literally has reshaped the entire global world, the map for who controls Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. And so if you understand that, I think that will help give you a much clearer picture of where this is going. Now, by the way, you're listening to the Mark Maw Show, where I bring to you the latest information on Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, and of course, this decentralized revolution that we're living through. This is literally going to change the way the world works, change humanity, the future of humanity. This is not just another cool little fad or technology. It's a revolution. And if you want to take advantage of the greatest wealth transfer that we've ever witnessed, then you have to take part of this revolution that's building. And the best way to do that, to have your edge, is to have this information most don't have. So you're listening to The Mark Maw Show. I'm going to be right back with more. All right, welcome back. You are listening to The Mark Maw Show, where I bring to you the latest on Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, and of course, the decentralized revolution leading to the great wealth transfer, the biggest opportunity that you will ever see in your lifetime and probably multiple lifetimes for that matter. The way to participate in it is to have the information that most people don't have, which is why I bring it to you each and every week. So make sure to pull out your phone, put a calendar reminder, tune in with me each and every week on this station so you do not miss it. I mean, seriously, not to be over the top, but literally one little piece of information could change everything for you. All right. Now, by the way, follow me on Twitter, @OneMarkMoss. I'm @OneMarkMoss. Send me a tweet. Tweet at me. Tell me you listen to me on the show. Ask me a question. I'll make sure to answer it on the show next week. So pull out your phone. Follow me on Twitter, @OneMarkMoss. Now, before the break, we were just talking about lots of things. We've been covering a lot of ground here, which is why you got to set that calendar reminder and tune in with me. But we were talking about how the level of entrenchment of Bitcoin in the United States has gotten to a point where they can't make it legal. They literally have told us that they won't as well. I was hinting towards something big happened over the last couple of months that really has cemented the United States' position in the world in Bitcoin. And what I'm talking about is, earlier I said that probably the biggest complaint, the biggest thing that I hear about Bitcoin is that, they're going to make it illegal. Okay, so that's number one, but we just answered that one. The second one is that, yeah, but China controls it all, right? China controls all the mining, right? They control the network, et cetera. Well, I've always said that's not actually true because the miners don't actually control the network. It's actually those who run the database, which are the nodes. But anyway, China did have over 51% of the mining capacity. Now, I don't want to get super deep into the technical side of it, but let me just explain to you what that means real quickly. I don't want to get deep into the technical side because I don't think it matters. And I know that's a blunt statement to say, but you are listening to me right now on the radio. How is it that my voice is getting through whatever this mic is on my desk and going through some wires on my internet right now and then going through some radio waves and then somehow hitting you in your car or wherever you're at listening to me? How does that work? You have no idea, neither do I. And I don't need to know how that works. What I need to know is that the radio is a very valuable tool to get me information. So I do know that. So I know that I need the radio. I use the radio. I don't know exactly how it works. And Bitcoin could be the same way. It's very important for you to understand the problems that it's solving, you know, potentially where it could go, how it could change things, how it could fix things, et cetera. It's important for you to know that, the why about Bitcoin. The what isn't so important, in my opinion. Now, some people are just techies, maybe tech nerds, sorry if that offends you, techies, and you want to figure that out, and that's great. And there's plenty of resources for you to do that, but I'm not going to dive into that on this call right now. But back to just to give you a high-level view, the way the Bitcoin network works is the Bitcoin network itself, first of all, is a bunch of things. It's like a digital cash, sure. It's like a digital gold, okay, sure. It's so much more than that. One thing that we do know for sure, because we don't know all the things it will become in the future as a new technology, one thing we do know for sure is it's the most secure computer network in the history of the world, period, mic drop. That's it. The most secure computer network in the history of the world, mic drop. Boom. Let me tell you what that means. So you're probably aware, it's been all over the news lately. Cyber attacks, cyber pandemics, all these things, right? Ransomware attacks. The internet's under attack. It's a dangerous place. That's all part of the World Economics Forum trying to lead us into this global ID system that they want to enact. But we're seeing these attacks happening all the time. I mean, we saw Experian is hacked, one of the credit bureaus, and more Americans' information got leaked and stolen onto the web than ever before from the Experian hack. We saw even the NSA, the NSA of the United States, the National Security, I don't even know what it stands for. But we've seen the NSA was hacked. And when they hacked the NSA, what did they take? Oh, they hacked the NSA and they stole their hacking software, the National Security Agency. Sorry. So the national level intelligence agency of the United States, the Department of Defense, under the authority of the Director of the National Intelligence, the NSA is responsible for global monitoring, collecting, and processing of information and data for foreign and domestic intelligence and counterintelligence purposes. Okay, I'm talking about the National Security Agency, the NSA. They were hacked. And when they hacked the NSA, they took their hacking software, which has led to all these ransomware attacks that we have all the time. That's great. So if the government's own agency that's responsible for national level intelligence under the Department of Defense cannot prevent their own networks from being hacked, how is any other network going to be able to prevent itself from being hacked? I mean, I'm talking about the most secure computer network in the world in some building with full-time, you know, security going around it, blah, 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 and they couldn't prevent it from being hacked. The Bitcoin network is different. The Bitcoin network has no security. It has no IT department. It has no building. It has no company, no nothing. It's completely open source, so everybody can see the code. Everybody has access to the code. Anybody can, remember we talked about the banking system being permissioned. The Bitcoin network is permissionless. Anybody can join the Bitcoin network without having to get permission. Like I said, so it's open, permissionless. And there's nobody, no building, nobody watching it. And there's, as of now, there's over $1 trillion of value sitting there in the open, unprotected. Come and get it. Come and get it. Alert, alert, alert. All hackers, come out and get the money off the Bitcoin network. It's not protected. It's open source. I mean, literally, they've hacked every other network. But the Bitcoin network, it's never been hacked. Ever. And most likely never will. Now, why is that? That's because it's a brand new technology that's never been done before. It's a technological revolution. And so the way that it works is that instead of having one centralized database like the NSA has, instead of having one, you have hundreds or thousands or even millions of copies of the database floating around. Everybody runs the entire database. Right now, today, the database is about 300 gigabytes. You run them on what's called a node. I run two nodes, one at my house in California, one at my house in Puerto Rico, and lots of other people do as well. So you have the nodes, all right, that runs the database. Now, in order for a transaction to happen, the databases have to achieve consensus. That means more than 51% have to agree that this transaction is valid. But how do the transactions get processed or put to the nodes? That is done by the miners. So miners are specially purpose-built computers that process transactions. I don't want to go super deep into this, but I'm going to give you just a little bit more so you have a base understanding of this, because you need to understand this to understand how the United States just took leadership in the world. So you need to understand this. I'm going to explain a little bit more to you. You're listening to The Mark Moss Show, where I bring to you the latest information on Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, and this decentralized revolution. So you have the edge, and you can participate in the greatest wealth transfer.
My dad works in B2B marketing. But I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure. I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to the one and only Ryan Seacrest.
Love the connection to people. I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people in an unscripted, unvarnished way. It's getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine. And I look forward to getting on the air. I look forward to it.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic the creative spark more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
History, I'll be right back. All right, welcome back. You are listening to The Mark Moss Show, and I'm bringing you the latest information on Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, and the decentralized revolution, literally leading to the biggest opportunity that you'll ever see. Not just you'll ever see, but that will have been seen in multiple generations. It's that big, leading to the greatest wealth transfer in history. Now, before the break, I was talking about a little bit about the technical side. I don't want to go super deep into the technical side, but I was explaining to you that this new technological revolution, Bitcoin, what is it, right? It's a bunch of things. But what we do know is it's the most secure computer network in the history of the world. While we're at a time right now where almost every other day you see a new news headline about networks being hacked. We talked about how even the NSA was hacked, which is the National Security Agency, which is the national level intelligence agency for the entire United States, even they were hacked. But yet the Bitcoin network is completely open. There's no company, no one monitoring it, no one protecting it, but yet it's never been hacked. And the reason why is because the database is decentralized, meaning instead of having one centralized database like the NSA has or like Facebook has, instead of one, there's a million or whatever, hundreds of thousands of databases running all around the world. And so they have to achieve consensus in order to verify a transaction. But how do the transactions get put up to the nodes? Well, that's being done through miners. So a miner is like a specially purpose-built computer that can hook into the network and help process transactions. Now, remember, if you were with me before the break, I said that Bitcoin is open. And it's, that means anybody can have access to the code, see what's happening on the code. It's also permissionless. So the banking system is permissioned, which is why most people can't get into it. Facebook is permissioned. You have to have permission to join it. And they don't even barely give you any APIs if you want to connect anything to it. But the Bitcoin network is open and permissionless. Anybody can just join. Anybody can see the code. Anybody can start building right on top of Bitcoin. And yet it's never been hacked. And so the miners, anybody could buy a computer, a mining computer, and you could hook it to the network and you could just start mining. No permission is required. Now, in exchange for helping process transactions on the Bitcoin network, you earn rewards, right? You get paid for that. It costs money to buy the miner, to buy the computer. It costs money to buy the electricity to mine, to power the miner. And so in return, you earn a reward. You make money back. You earn rewards two ways. The first way is through block rewards. And so what that means is that for the more blocks, or the more, let's just call it, the more processing that we do on the network, we unlock new Bitcoins, new coins, new rewards. There's about, as of right now, there's 900 new Bitcoin unlocked every day, 900. That amount gets cut in half every 4 years. So the last, we call it a halving, was May 2020. And the next one happens in 4 years from that date, so May 2024. And that will go from 900 down to about 450 Bitcoin per day. So the miners are earning rewards two ways. One, unlocking new coins. And two, they earn a percentage of the fees for processing the transactions. Now, back to the miners. So the miners are the ones that process these things and earn the rewards. And so over 51%, or about approximately even up to 60% of all the miners, all the Bitcoin miners in the world, were located in China. And so a lot of people were saying, oh, shoot, you know, China controls the network. That's so dangerous. They could potentially take over the network. You know, they have over 51%. They have consensus. If they all organized and got all their miners to get together, they could attack the network and things like that. And, you know, while I said earlier, it's the nodes that actually run the database, not the miners. So really, it wasn't that big of a threat, but it was still there. They could have done something malicious. But a couple of months ago, China decided that they didn't want the Bitcoin miners to be in their country anymore. As a matter of fact, I'm calling this China's second fatal mistake. Yeah, that big. China's second fatal mistake. So the first fatal mistake was about 150 years ago, 200 years ago. The entire world started moving to a gold standard. They decided that gold was better money. And so everybody started moving over. Well, China didn't want to move to a gold standard. China wanted to stay on a silver standard. Well, the whole world went to gold. China stayed on silver. And guess what? It didn't work out too well for China. China lost big. The whole gold won. They lost with silver. And they lost their position on the world stage as a global power. In the early 1900s, around 1920, 1930, they had to give up on the silver standard. And they had to switch to a gold standard like everybody else did. For the last 100 years, they've been trying to get back to a position of power. They have become the largest holder of gold in the world. They've had a policy for about the last decade or so where anybody could come mine gold in China, but you weren't allowed to send the gold out of the country. Any gold that you mined in China had to be sold back to China. And they also imported mass amounts of gold. So it's estimated that China holds over 30,000 tons of gold, which makes them the biggest gold holder in the world by far and away. By the way, you're listening to the Mark Moss Show, where I'm talking about Bitcoin, I'm talking about cryptocurrencies, and I'm talking about the decentralized revolution. Make sure to tune in with me each and every week on the Mark Moss Show. Tweet at me at @1MarkMoss. Ask me some questions, and I'll make sure to answer those for you. So China made that mistake, sticking with silver. They spent the last 100 years acquiring the most amount of gold, and they've finally become the largest gold holder. Congratulations. They also had the most Bitcoin mining happening in China, and they could have done the same thing with gold, which is, hey, you can mine Bitcoin in China, but you have to sell all the Bitcoin to us, just like they did with gold, but they didn't do that. A couple of months ago, they decided to kick all the Bitcoin miners out of the country. Get out of here. We don't want you here. And I'm calling this the second fatal mistake, because they tried to hang, and when the whole world went to gold, they stayed with silver and they lost big. Now the whole world is moving to Bitcoin and they're trying to stick with gold. They're a step behind. And I believe this will be their second fatal mistake. Now they went ahead and shut down. So remember, I said that they had about 60% of the Bitcoin network there. And they literally shut it off, kicked it out of the country. I mean, within days, we saw over half of the network shut down, literally. It's the largest attack we could have ever imagined to happen on Bitcoin. And it happened, and the Bitcoin network didn't even skip a beat. It kept going. Sure, transaction times maybe got a little bit slower, a little bit more expensive, but it didn't really affect things too much. Now, all those miners had to pack up and move. They had to leave. Where are they going to go? Well, the majority of them, a good majority of them, moved to Texas. They moved to Texas. That's right. So the United States became the big beneficiary of this. As a matter of fact, like I said, it was Texas. And the reason why Texas is because of the massive amounts of energy that's being wasted over there. Now, I say wasted because there's also this narrative that Bitcoin is a waste of electricity, is a waste of energy. And that couldn't be further from the truth. It's a, I'd call it a misleading headline, but it's kind of a dishonesty. At least it's a intellectually dishonest lie that the media is telling you. Bitcoin goes to where there's wasted electricity, where nobody's using it. So it uses trash. It doesn't use anything that's in demand. I'll explain to you what I mean by that, what's happening in Texas, and why now the United States is leading the world in Bitcoin, because this has massive implications that you need to know. Like I said, it's been like the number one thing that I hear from people is like, oh yeah, the government's going to make it illegal. But as I said, they're not, and I've given you many reasons why. But now the United States has taken the lead of the world. It's up to our best interests. It's a national security issue. If we want the United States to continue doing well, for people in the United States to continue doing well, then it's in the United States' best interest to continue to allow this to happen. So I want to explain to you why that is, and we'll talk about the power, why Texas, and so much more. Like I said, you're listening to the Mark Moss Show, where I'm bringing you the most up-to-date information on Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, and the decentralized revolution each and every week. So you have the information that you need, the asymmetric information, to take advantage of the asymmetric edge, the asymmetric opportunity that Bitcoin presents, the greatest wealth transfer in the history of the world. Again, you're listening to the Mark Moss Show. put it on your calendar, be with me each and every week, and I will be right back. All right, welcome back. You are listening to The Mark Moss Show, where I bring to you the latest information on Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, and the decentralized revolution each and every week. I mean, I'm bringing you the information that you're not going to hear anywhere else, and it's the information that you need to have the edge so you know how to participate. What happens is, you know, anytime that you buy something that you don't fully understand, then, and you don't understand why you bought it or where it's supposed to go in the future, then you can easily be shaken out of that. Let's say that you saw somebody on TikTok or Twitter say, you should buy this cryptocurrency or Bitcoin or whatever. And you just buy it because, I don't know, they sounded good, they're convincing or whatever. But then the price, you know, the price of Bitcoin dipped from 65,000 all the way down to like 30,000. And then you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I just lost half my money. I better sell as fast as I can. Well, if you really understood what it was, what was going on, and most importantly, where it's going in the future, you probably wouldn't have sold and you would have held on and you would have made all your money back. And so that's why it's important for you to understand this. Unfortunately, well, it's not unfortunate. As a matter of fact, it's not unfortunate. It's actually fortunate. Fortunately, Bitcoin is volatile. It's very, very volatile. And that is a good thing. Why? Why is it a good thing? Well, because volatility works both ways. If there was zero volatility, then the price doesn't go up or down, right? It works both ways. How does an asset like Bitcoin go from zero to being worth $58,000 without volatility? It doesn't. It can't, right? And so we want the volatility because we want the price to keep going up. I think we could see it be worth $500,000. I think we could see one Bitcoin worth $1 million, but it won't happen in a straight line. It's going to constantly go up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down as it continues to go higher. As a matter of fact, since Bitcoin has come out over the last now about 12 years, every single year, the lowest point, the lowest price every year has been higher. So it seems very volatile, but if you looked at the lowest price point every year, it's always gone up except for 1 year, that was in 2015. And so it's volatile, but how do you, a lot of people said, oh, I wish I could have had, if I could have a time machine, I wish I would have bought Bitcoin when it was a dollar. Well, I'm here to tell you that even if you bought Bitcoin for a dollar, you wouldn't still own it today. The reason why is because one, when it went from a dollar to $10, you probably would have sold it. Or maybe you held it and it went to $1,000. From one to 1,000, you probably would have sold it. What about when it went to 1,000 and dropped all the way back down to 200? Oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I should have sold it 1,000. What'd I do? And then it starts going back up to 300, 400, and then you sell. And now imagine that happening over and over and over and over again for a decade. How would you have ever held it? You wouldn't have been able to. Most people wouldn't have been able to. Well, the way that you can is to understand where it's going in the long run and stop thinking about the short term. So that's why I'm bringing this to you. We were talking about China making the second fatal mistake, kicking all the Bitcoin network out of their country, and how the United States has been the big beneficiary of that, and it's all gone to Texas. The majority of it has gone to Texas. As of now, the United States accounts for the largest share of mining, about 35% of the global hash rate, or that means they have the power of about 35% of the network is in the United States, followed by second, which is Kazakhstan and Russia. At least that's what the data shows. And so part of the reason why it's gone to Texas and Kazakhstan and Russia is because of the low energy costs, right? So I was talking about this before. You hear lots of what we call FUD. That's fear, uncertainty, and doubt. So whenever you hear like a bad article, like bashing it, we call it FUD. And we've been putting that out, and we've been seeing a lot of FUD that Bitcoin's going to boil the oceans, that Bitcoin's consuming more energy than small countries, that we don't have this much energy to waste, and all these other things, all this nonsense, right? But I'm here to tell you that that's actually not the case. As a matter of fact, that's not how Bitcoin works at all. So let me explain how this works so you can be prepared to not get shaken out. So the way it works is that if I want to mine Bitcoin, I have to buy an expensive computer. Once I buy the expensive computer, my only cost is the electricity. Now, in California, in the summer, electricity can be as high as 40 cents per kilowatt hour. Well, you won't make any money mining Bitcoin at 40 cents a watt. As a matter of fact, in order to be profitable, you have to be under 5 cents a kilowatt. And really, if you want to be competitive, you need to be under 3 cents a kilowatt. Well, where do you find 3 cent kilowatt hour electricity? I mean, what the heck? How is it 40 cents in California and 3, like where would you find it for 3? It makes no sense, right? Well, remember, if you've been with me for the whole episode, supply and demand. The only places that have 3 cents a kilowatt electricity are places that have more electricity than they have buyers for, meaning that there's all this electricity going to waste, and if somebody just wants to take it for 2 or 3 cents, just come and take it. That is the only electricity that Bitcoin is using. They are not competing in California at 40 cents a watt, or Ohio at 8 cents a watt, or Washington at 7 cents. They're not taking any of that power because they can't. It's too expensive. They're only going to places where there is excess energy or usually wasted energy that is not being used. And that's the case in Texas. So in Texas, there's oil coming out of the ground. Part of the, when they get the oil out of the well, there's also natural gas coming out of the ground. Now, all throughout North America, Canada, North America, Texas, et cetera, a lot of that natural gas isn't captured. Natural gas is too cheap. They don't even bother. And so they either do one of two things. They either vent it off, meaning they just let the natural gas just escape into the atmosphere, or two, they flare it off, meaning they're burning it at the wellhead. So they're not even capturing it. They're either literally letting it just go into the atmosphere or at least burning it, which is a little bit better. So what they figured out is what we could do is we can take that natural gas that's not being used and we can turn that into a, we can pipe that into a gas diesel generator and we can make electricity and we can mine Bitcoin with that. So it's wasted energy. As a matter of fact, it's energy, it's potentially, I'm not going to get into the science of it, but potentially it could be bad for the atmosphere to leak all this natural gas. So instead of just letting it leak into the atmosphere and being bad, they're actually capturing it and using it for something productive. It's not a waste at all. It's not a waste at all. It's a waste to let that be leaked into the atmosphere. And the same is all over the world. That's why Kazakhstan, of course, if you know anything about nuclear energy or oil or natural gas, it's all in Russia and Kazakhstan, which is why, again, they have so much excess energy that's super, super cheap. As a matter of fact, I don't know the exact numbers. I didn't prepare for this. But of all the energy in the world, it's like... I don't even want to butcher the numbers, but of all the wasted energy in the world, just the amount that gets wasted, that means the energy that's produced, but there's no buyers or users for it. Of the amount that's wasted, Bitcoin only uses like 2% of the wasted energy, not of the total energy. And so that's why. Now, going back to El Salvador for a minute, El Salvador has a volcano. Okay, well, what good is that? Well, a volcano with the heat, they can actually use that to turn into electricity. Okay, that's cool, but the problem is that you can't transport electricity. So even if I could get electricity from the volcano, that doesn't help anybody in El Salvador. So what? Big deal. Well, it is a big deal because now we can mine Bitcoin at the volcano. So the volcano is worthless to El Salvador, and now they can turn it into money, and they can use that money to finance other projects in their country, like schools and parks and things like that. And so... Bitcoin isn't using or wasting electricity. As a matter of fact, it's using wasted electricity, electricity that would be going to waste. And now Texas is the big beneficiary and the United States. And so if you look at the United States over the last 20 years, what's led to all the growth has been the rise of the FANG stocks, Facebook, Apple, Netflix, Google, the technology, the internet. And now the United States is sitting firmly in a spot to take advantage of the biggest technological revolution that we'll ever see, which is Bitcoin. Like I said, Texas has been the big beneficiary. The United States is coming up. We have entrenchment all through the governments as well as the financial industry. And that's not all. There's even bigger things coming, and I am going to break that down for you in just a second. You will not believe what comes next. By the way, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show, and I will be right back.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.